That is the opening movement of the music for the Royal Fireworks by George Frederick Handel, in performance by the Augmented English Concert, led by Trevor Pinnock. And I say augmented because the original performance of that piece likely had something like 24 oboes, 12 bassoons, 9 horns, 9 trumpets, a contrabassoon, 9 timpani, and 3 side drums, or what we might know as a snare drum or some other sort of drum of that sort. And the English Concert, in this case, essentially recreates all that with that massive number of wind instruments. Somewhat debatable whether there were actually strings at the first performance. There was no question that the king didn't want them and that Handel did. And this piece will open the concert by the next concert by an orchestra in Champaign-Urbana called the Prairie Ensemble this coming Sunday, February the 24th, which will be at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign for a 7:30 program. It's all winds and brass and percussion, plus some voices on that particular concert. More in a moment. I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. And this is one of those occasional days where I sort of get to wear both the hat of the host and the hat of sort of the interviewee, because I happen to be the music director of the Prairie Ensemble. But I also have somebody else I can talk to because, as I said, there'll be some voices involved in that concert. And they happen, quite circumstantially, to be called Prairie Voices. No relationship whatsoever to the Prairie Ensemble. But it's a choir that I think was founded a couple years ago by its director, Laurie Matheson, who is also editor-in-chief at the University of Illinois Press and editor for some of their particular product lines. And she is with me right now in the studio. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Prairie Voices, was that accurate within the last couple
yes.
years?
Mm-hmm. Yep, just two years ago.
And what made you decide to do that?
Well, I had some repertoire I wanted to do, and I just wanted a chance to work devotedly with my own choir. I have a little church choir over in Decatur, which has certain parameters. I really love that work also, but there's a little more scope with this particular group. Prairie Voices is obviously can also take on secular repertoire and repertoire that's musically a little bit more ambitious. It's a bigger group than the church group, so just presented some new challenges. It's very much an occasional concert group right now. It's not one that rehearses all year round or presents a season roster of programs, but just occasional programs at the moment. So,
did you start with a Christmas program, or did you,
no,
you did something
we did
in the
a
spring.
Summer program with the Howells Requiem.
That's
was kind of
was.
The centerpiece of that, and some Brahms and Britten, and some pieces of mine.
I remember I was at that concert and I enjoyed it very much, and I especially had wanted to hear the Requiem of Herbert Howells, which is certainly not often done.
It's fabulous.
And yeah, a really stupendously beautiful piece. I got the chance to sing it a couple or three times myself with mm-hmm. the choir in Chicago, so it was really fun to hear it. And I was impressed with the group. It's more or less a pickup group. I mean, you
yeah.
invite
right.
whoever you want to sing.
That's right.
You don't have any auditions, right?
I haven't had auditions yet. I've been in the community long enough that I have a number of connections and know quite a few singers. And each of these programs has had a little bit different scope in terms of the number of singers and the musical challenges. So I've tried to recruit singers around the demands of the program that I want to do. So in this particular case, for the program we're doing with you, it's a rather small group. It's just 23 singers, six, 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 and five.
Which means six soprano, six alto,
six tenors, and five basses. And so it's very well balanced, and the voices are well matched, I think, for the most part. And I was aiming for a Stravinskian kind of a sound.
Of course, we haven't mentioned Stravinsky yet, the piece that you're going to be playing, that you will be singing with ensemble members who, of course, will be playing, is the Mass, certainly not often sung, by Igor Stravinsky.
Right.
As well as some pieces that the choir will sing on its own, and the ensemble will do a bunch of stuff on its own as well. Just a little bit about your own background. As I said, you're editor-in-chief as of fairly recently.
Yeah, just for about a year that I've been in that role. I've been at the press since 1996, and I've been an acquisitions editor, meaning that I recruit projects for us to publish in music and history for about 12 years now.
And how did you decide to get into that? I mean, you've got bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees in music. And
my bachelor's degree is in English, actually.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. And I went into commercial publishing right out of college for a couple of years, worked for Scribner's in New York, and then was away from publishing for quite a while. I came to Champaign to do the doctorate and went to the press as a half-time graduate assistant, basically, and then just sort of was able to move into a full-time marketing position while I was finishing the degree, and then moved into acquisitions and just never left. So now it's that's kind of my day job, and I do as much music on the side as I can.
And probably as much singing as directing.
I'm not doing as much singing right now, actually. I'm writing quite a bit of music. Actually, there's a production of The Tempest that's going up the week after this in Terre Haute at St. Mary the Woods College that I've written 12 songs for. So I've been busy with that kind of thing too. But I do prepare recital programs from time to time.
For solo voice,
yeah.
But you also sing and are associate director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign Urbana.
Right.
You sing
that's
in
right.
that chorus.
And that's a longtime association with them. And Chet Always, yeah.
Yeah. Chet Always, of course, the music director of that, artistic director of that organization. There are a number of singing opportunities in a community like Champaign Urbana. And when I say like, I mean not only that it's a university town, so there's a lot of, for lack of a better term, educated people here, mm-hmm. but also people with wide variety of interests, and there's a thriving arts community of many different types. Mm-hmm. And yet there doesn't seem to be any choir that I can think of that's a standalone group, meaning not affiliated with the university, that doesn't specialize in something.
Mm-hmm.
And for that matter, there's almost no standalone choirs at all, except the choir with the Baroque artists that
right.
I can think of. Again, except for the big ones at the university. I know you said you knew a lot of people. Is this something that you have the impression that singers you're working with are hungry for? Or are these singers just happy to sing whatever they can sing as much as they can?
Many of the singers that are singing with me also sing, for example, with you at Emmanuel, or sing with the Baroque artists, or sing with other church choirs, or sing with the Parkland Singers, or, you know, there are various, there's a lot of crossover. So I think in that sense, singers have the opportunity to participate in different kinds of repertoire. The singers that are working on this particular program with me, I think, have really been intrigued by the challenges of the Stravinsky and the chance to do music that requires a pretty high degree of musical concentration. The tuning issues are significant, or they require quite a bit of attention, I'll say. And the approach to the style, which I'm sure we'll talk about more, is a little unusual. It's not a piece doesn't have the same aesthetic as a lot of other music, I would say, and I think that interests people. You know, the challenge of a different idiom, different kinds of stylistic and vocal demands. I think at least the way I've set up these programs so far, it's a very focused rehearsal period. So we just had 4 2-hour rehearsals to prepare this program. And so it's in some ways that's a little easier for people to make a commitment to than something that rehearses 52 weeks a year or 40 weeks a year with the school year or something like that. It's a little bit of an adventure, a little bit of a musical adventure for these folks, I think.
Well, I went to work with them during the rehearsal last night. You were kind enough to let me to come in and sort of change a few things that you had done, and maybe just reinforce some things that you had done, and which inevitably is happens when someone prepares a choir that somebody else ends up conducting
right.
in a performance. And I was, although I'd seen the roster of who was singing for you, I guess I hadn't entirely paid attention who was in there. And I looked around the room and I thought, I know almost all of these people. And the ones I didn't know knew me and probably, you know, had introduced themselves to me before in any event. And I recognized them in part because from other groups.
Right.
There's numerous people who are not only involved in the ones you mentioned, but also in other little groups that have come and gone, or maybe are still around at the moment, where often, say, graduate students at the University of Illinois and choral conducting will put together because, of course, everybody wants something to conduct. Mm-hmm. Every conductor wants a group to conduct, and that you can't always have that.
Right.
Not everybody can have that in the course of getting their education unless they go out and get the group themselves.
That's right. Yeah. And a colleague of mine, Nellie Matova, has been pretty successful with her little group, which is called Capella Orpheus, and does very challenging contemporary repertoire. And some of the folks who sing quite often with her are singing in the Stravinsky program as well. So that's a wonderful opportunity she's created to tackle a kind of music that isn't done very often.
And we had her and a couple of the members of the chorus on here, well, just before their last concert,
right,
a couple weeks ago. Reminding listeners that we're talking about a concert that is happening this coming Sunday in Champaign at Holy Cross Catholic Church by the Prairie Ensemble, collaborating in one of the pieces with Prairie Voices, a separate group in spite of the name, in a program that instrumentally consists exclusively of woodwind, brass, and percussion instruments. There are no string players in this concert. The Prairie Ensemble, normally an orchestra, although sometimes other things, either within a single concert or four particular concerts. And so this one, I opened with beginning of Handel's Royal Fireworks music, and what we're doing is not recreating that because I don't have access to 24 oboes. I mean, I suppose I could maybe find them at the various universities, but then pulling them all together would be sort of ridiculous. But nonetheless, we're doing it for all winds and augmenting in a way that I'll probably talk to the audience about that night. And then closing the program with music by an American composer no one's ever heard of, or almost nobody's ever heard of, named Arthur Byrd. It's a very nice piece for a serenade for 10 wind instruments in quite the 19th century romantic vein. And then the middle portion of the program has the central work, which is the Stravinsky Mass, which we've sort of obliquely mentioned so far, and then around it, two other pieces that have some sort of ecclesiastical derivation, influence, inspiration. And all three of these central works have chant as their link. The piece that it will lead into the Stravinsky is by a fellow named Arvo Pärt, who's an Estonian composer who used to write a lot of really out there music and apparently got involved in film composition, and at that point made things very simple. And now his music tends to be simple almost to the extreme. I'll have an example a little later. Stravinsky, on the other hand, and Arvo Pärt's music very much inspired by, even to the point of being based on at times, music of the Orthodox Church. Stravinsky, inspired by chant, inspired by the Russian Orthodox Church in which he grew up, but nonetheless, he's writing a Catholic Mass. And it doesn't exactly sound like Gregorian chant. So what's your take briefly on what he's doing? And then we're going to hear some of the openings so people have some idea of what we're talking about.
Well, the story about his approaching the Mass, I think, is that he had come across some of the Mozart Masses and basically thought, I think I could do my own sort of thing with this in my own style. I guess my sense of the Mass is I think in part, particularly in a movement like the Credo, which is chant-like in its presentation, although I don't know that it's based on the Gregorian chants themselves, but it has very regular kind of a rhythmic pulse sort of a approach to the to conveying the text. Everyone's saying the text at the same time, so it's very clear and understandable. And it's
and the credo is the creed.
That's right. This is what we believe as a community of the church. And that seems to me very much a community, sort of a communal activity. You know, this we're saying this creed together as a community, which I imagine comes out of church experiences that he would have had. I really think each of the movements has its own character, though, and the Gloria and the Sanctus both incorporate soloists in a very virtuosic way, contrasting that with more sort of homophonic use of the chorus, homophonic meaning that everyone is singing the text, the same text at the same time. And the Kyrie and the Agnus, which are the external movements, are the most harmonically interesting, I think, of the piece. And a lot of the expressivity of the piece, I think, comes out of the harmonies and strange dissonances and strange ways that the melodies cross each other. So especially the end of the Agnus, we were talking a few days ago, Kevin, about how we're not really sure people will know when the piece is over because it ends in kind of an indeterminate way. And the last line of the Agnus Dei, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, is grant us peace. And the harmonic ambiguity is so strong at the end that it really seems like there's some question that Stravinsky's conveying about whether peace is possible or whether it can be granted
or what
or
kind
received.
Of peace.
Yeah, what kind of peace that might be. So I think the piece is very expressive in an austere kind of a way. It's certainly not a romantically expressive piece, but I think the ways that the instruments and the voices are juxtaposed and contrasted and layered on each other is very expressive in particular ways, and the ways the harmonies move around. So it's a very visceral piece, I think, in some ways. That you're sort of confronted with this piece that moves you by its strangeness almost.
Well, let's listen to the very beginning, which of course is what people will first encounter. And as you said, each of the movements sounds different. But this is, I would say, a relatively friendly opening.
I think it's I think it's quite accessible, but it's unexpected, I would say.
It's the Kyrie eleison, which means Lord have mercy, and then Christe eleison, Christ have mercy, and then again Lord have mercy. That's all it says in this opening movement, and it's therefore pretty short. We're going to hear in this performance, I actually didn't bring the name of the performers. It's the Westminster Cathedral Choir? I didn't bring the disc. Well, in any event, this is pertinent. It actually uses boys' voices for sopranos and altos, and then men's voices, of course, for tenors and bass. James O'Donnell, I do know, is the conductor. That is the opening movement or portion of the Mass by Igor Stravinsky, and it is indeed the Westminster Cathedral Choir. My memory was decent there, I guess. The members of the City of London Sinfonia, conducted by James O'Donnell, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That piece will be performed in its entirety by Prairie Voices, a choir local to Champaign-Urbana. It's been around for a couple years now. And the Prairie Ensemble, unrelated group that's been around in our 17th season. And I say our because I'm not only the host of this show, which is Live and Local, but I'm also the music director and conductor of that group. And let me mention that today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. My guest on the show is Laurie Matheson, who's the conductor of the Prairie Voices. And so you've heard part of the style of the piece. Every movement does have take a different approach. And you mentioned the credo or the creed. Mm-hmm. That's the part that, you know, in church people recite together almost certainly as a congregation. The other elements might be sung, they might be chanted, mm-hmm. depending on the church. They might be done together. They might be done by the priest. So I suppose that particular one, as well as the movement at the end, the Agnus Dei, makes sense that he sets it all exactly together. Everybody's doing the same thing. But you mentioned that there are some soloists in a couple of the movements. Do you have any sense of why he might have chosen these portions to have soloists sing?
Well, the Gloria, which is the second movement, I mean, it's really almost an ecstatic presentation of the text. It's so, it's very ornamented. It's very virtuosic and florid, and it is interlaced with responses from the choir that are of a much different character, that are much more, much simpler, more rhythmically punctuated. And so there's a wonderful back and forth between those two textures. I think he just he wanted the music to be elaborate within what that means to Stravinsky, who was sort of the school that less is more, you know, that you restrict your palate in a particular way, and that gives you more creative license, more creative latitude than you would have if you didn't make those kinds of choices. But I think in the Gloria, he scaled back the performing forces and kind of scaled up the virtuosity of the music, and could do that with soloists where he didn't want to do it with a choir. The other movement that uses soloists is the Sanctus, uses a quartet of soloists, men's trio for the first part, and then a SATB quartet of soloists. For the Pleni Suncelli, which is Heaven and Earth are Full of Your Glory. And it just sort of builds up through these progressive entrances to this incredibly, again, ecstatic quality. And the rhythms are very elaborate in those solo passages. There's a lot of rhythms that sort of pull against each other. They're very complicated, five to a beat or three to a beat. And the dissonances that kind of develop out of those voices coming together. So just a more complex texture, I think, that makes sense to assign to soloists.
Well, here's the opening of the Gloria. I haven't mentioned so far, other than saying that the concert is all going to involve winds and brass and percussion, that Stravinsky's unusual orchestra for this consists of, he called it double wind quintet, but not the wind quintet that we usually think of those. There are two oboes, an English horn, and two bassoons, and then there are two trumpets and three trombones. It's a really unusual kind of combination of instruments, and he plays with that combination in this opening as well. This is the Gloria from the Mass by Igor Stravinsky on Live and Local. And so you get an idea of the treatment of this particular text that Stravinsky adopts from his Mass with the Westminster Cathedral Choir and soloists, who are both boys. And Stravinsky requests that for the soprano and alto parts, when possible, to use child's voices, preferably boys' voices, which can be a little difficult to get hold of. I mean, it certainly could be done in this community. There's a wonderful children's choir. But I know, Laurie, you wanted in using prairie voices to use prairie voices.
Yeah.
How have you addressed the notion that he wanted a child's voice to sound for those two parts with your adult sopranos and altos?
Well, a couple of ways. One, we're very fortunate to have a very talented countertenor in the choir, and he's Chris Holman, who's also an organist and choir director in town. He is singing the alto solo, actually, and what you just heard was the soprano and alto soloists in the Gloria movement, and he'll be singing the alto solo in that part along with a woman soprano, Perla Robertson. So we do have one voice in those two sections that has that male, high male sound. But the other way that I've tried to approach it is to select voices that are not opulent voices, that are pretty voices that sing without a lot of vibrato, and with a color that is more subtle than an operatic voice would have. It's certainly not the same quality that a boy choir has, which really can't be duplicated by adult female voices. But I think we've tried to get the quality of blend that you can get with voices that are less operatic or less that are not such huge voices as you might use for Brahms or for more romantic repertoire. So it's it's trying to approach the music through in a way that doesn't use a lot of vibrato, that is very looking for a very focused, contained kind of sound. Contained might not be a good word, but.
Well, I liked when I worked with the choir last night. I was really delighted with how well prepared they were, and how it was clear that these people read music very well and hear music very well. Because, as you said earlier, it's a difficult piece to tune. Mm-hmm. You could take a couple of voices, say the soprano and alto, and often they sound perfectly "quote unquote" normal together. But then, and maybe you add three voices, and they sound more or less the usual
tonal
diatonic scale,
mm-hmm.
But then he'll take the other voice and throw in sort of non-chord tones or unusual chord tones, mm-hmm. and he does the same thing with the instruments, mm-hmm. in that piece, and it makes it really kind of challenging. I was singing along during part of the rehearsal last night when you were working with the choir, and even though I've sung through most of the parts myself, I hadn't actually sung the piece with the choir and had mm-hmm. to therefore tune, mm-hmm. With other people. So
right.
I was very glad to be sitting next to your bassist who tuned very well.
One of the difficulties is that a part often departs from and returns to a pitch. It's the same pitch on the page, but it actually doesn't sound the same because of the way the harmonies have changed around it. So it might be still a C natural, but the second one, you might sing it slightly higher. You might sing the interval slightly bigger or smaller.
I definitely found that out because, I've sung this by myself, but I swear it's the same. It's still a G, but mm-hmm. it's not the same.
It's
G.
not the same G.
You have
G,
to do it
yeah.
differently.
And that's a real challenge. And I've been so appreciative of the sophistication of these singers that they've been able to get at some of those subtleties of the tuning.
Laurie Matheson's Prairie Voices will join the Prairie Ensemble for Stravinsky's Mass as part of the concert that's called A Windy Affair, because the orchestra consists of only wind instruments and some percussion in a couple of the pieces. Sunday night at 7:30 at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign, there will be a concert, what's called a concert conversation, essentially a pre-concert chat at 7 o'clock. I'll talk about the program overall, and Laurie and I might chat a bit about the piece, the Stravinsky as well. And you can get information on the series of the Prairie Ensemble. The web address is prairieensemble.org. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances, and we're talking about this particular program on today's show. And the third piece that of this central portion of this concert. I call it the ecclesiastical portion. The first one is for wind instruments. It's a piece by Arvo Pärt. In his kind of repetitive, his music tends to be very repetitive. And when you start hearing it and you hear the repetition, you think, oh, this is going to go on like this. And many of his pieces are like this, and I've experienced this way. And then after a while, yes, it goes on like that, but you get completely sucked in and mesmerized by it, and you find it, I find his music to be quite beautiful. And the couple of times that the Prairie Ensemble has played music by Arvo Pärt before, the audience seemed to have exactly that response, or at least it was a beautiful piece response. I don't know what they thought initially. And in fact, I talked to a couple of people who went to the Krannert Center in Urbana, was it a week or two ago, to hear the East Coast Chamber Orchestra. And I guess they had changed, I didn't get to hear the concert, but they changed their program kind of at the last minute to include the piece that we're going to be playing on this concert. It's called Fratres, which means brothers, by Arvo Pärt. But there are about 8 different versions of this. And I frankly forget what he originally wrote it for, but there's a version for solo violin, and there's a version for violin and piano, and there's a version for strings only, and a version for strings and percussion. It's really sort of crazy. So, of course, the East Coast Chamber Orchestra is a string orchestra. They did the string version with percussion. And, one of my board members for the group told me that he was really looking forward to our performance because he loved the piece, hearing them do it for strings, and wanted to hear it, you know, in this other rendition, which will be for wind instruments, which change color both by virtue of the fact that there are different colors among the instruments, but also he switches them up, the combinations and so on. It's a beautiful piece. I'm not going to sample it today. People can come out and hear it. Then is the Stravinsky, and then is the third piece, set of pieces, which Prairie Voices will do on its own without any orchestra at all. By a wonderful French composer and organist named Maurice Durufle, who didn't write much music.
He didn't.
And what he wrote was, as far as I know, exclusively for organ or voices.
But it's really beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. So tell us about these 4 motets on Gregorian themes.
Well, Durufle was a huge exponent of Gregorian chant in France, and incorporated it into a lot of his organ music and into his Requiem, which he wrote a few years after these pieces. These 4 little motets, each of which takes a Gregorian chant tune, which shows up in some services. I don't know. Do you use any chant in the Episcopal service?
Yeah, Laurie's referring to the fact that I'm a choir master at Emmanuel Episcopal Church in Champaign. There, we will use chant certain times of the year. Mm-hmm. I don't know who. There tend to be composed chants, mm-hmm. but in a Gregorian style, in an old style. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they actually come out of old tradition, but mm-hmm. but his actually for these pieces take old chants.
That's right. Yeah, and chant is Gregorian chant is just a single melodic line, just a single line of melody. It's not metered usually, meaning it doesn't have a regular pulse. It just sort of unfolds in a very linear way. So Durufle took 4 chants and wrote a motet around each one. 3 are for mixed chorus, and 1 is for women's choir out of these 4. And they're all unaccompanied. They all use the same harmonic vocabulary. He uses very gentle dissonances and quite a bit of parallel motion in the voices, and it's just ravishing. It's just really beautiful, beautiful music.
I think a lot of choirs do, at least choirs in the Catholic and perhaps Anglican tradition, and probably some other choirs too. I'm talking about church choirs now. Are most familiar with the first of the 4.
Right.
And might as well just play some of that. It's called Ubi Caritas et Amor, which means
where love is, there God is also, I think, is the basic idea of the text.
Music by Maurice Durufle. It's sung here by the Corydon Singers, conducted by Matthew Best.
Thank you.
stunning piece of music, Ubi Caritas by Maurice Durufle, with Corydon Singers here, another direction of Matthew Best. That piece and the other three of the four motets on Gregorian themes by Durufle will be sung by Prairie Voices at a concert by the Prairie Ensemble this coming Sunday at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign. The concert starts at 7:30, and Prairie Voices are guests of the Prairie Ensemble, and of course they'll join us, as we've been saying, for Stravinsky's Mass, Winds plus Voices, and the four Durufle pieces are just choir without any accompaniment at all. And I don't know of people who are particularly churched in a tradition that includes chant might have recognized the chant. But I've seen the chant written out for that music. And so what Durufle does, I guess, is essentially take the notes mm-hmm. and in the same order, and he just manipulates the rhythms and harmonizes them.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, in that performance, you heard the first couple phrases of the chant as what we call an incipit. In other words, a little snippet of the chant that precedes the setting. He doesn't indicate that in the score, and actually we're not going to do that in our performance, but you got to hear it sort of unadorned in its original state there.
Actually, I was sort of thrown by it, because I was thinking, no, he doesn't write. That's not how it goes. And then they got going, and I forgot that that's what they did in this particular recording. And then the other three the texts come from similar portions of, are they liturgical? She's looking things up. She's saying, I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know the answer to this question either. Well, all I can tell you is that it's not really clear that, well, each of those four were published separately, and each text has to do with a different part of the church's year. So it's not really clear that they were designed as a whole among themselves. I don't know why he was attracted to these particular four, unless just the beauty of the melody.
I know the one we just heard is often done on Maundy Thursday because it's a text that has to do with what goes on there. Mm-hmm. Or at least it's at least in the Anglican Church, the text is used during the course of the service.
I think just in the sense of being a text about love as a sort of redeeming force in the universe.
You can sing that any time of the year, for
I
that matter,
so.
As
I
far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's beautiful music, and I'm really looking forward to hearing Prairie Voices do those. I haven't heard them do that. Of course, I've heard them do the Stravinsky with piano, and looking forward to getting them together with the Winds of the Prairie Ensemble, which will happen this week as rehearsals get started. And really appreciate your coming on the show and chatting with us about it. Laurie Matheson is director of Prairie Voices, also happens to be editor-in-chief at University of Illinois Press, and choir director at, what's the name of the church in Decatur?
First Congregational United Church of Christ in Decatur.
It sounds like a hybrid.
It is a hybrid. I don't know the exact ins and outs, but yeah, some very congregation-driven, so definitely has a congregation component.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, and
my
best
pleasure.
Of luck with the performance.
Look forward to the concert. Thank you.
The concert by the Prairie Ensemble will end with a piece that I think is a great deal of fun, and anybody who happens to know the Serenade for Winds by Antonín Dvořák is liable to enjoy this piece very much. And I think whether you know that piece or not, you'll enjoy this piece very much anyway. It's much in the romantic vein. It was by an American composer named Arthur Byrd, B-I-R-D, and he wasn't overly well known in his day, and he's certainly far less known in our day, but he was well thought of by those who knew his music, and he was trained in Germany, as many American composers at the time were. This happened to win a prize in 1898, his Serenade for Wind Instruments, combination of two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, and two horns. And let's listen to some of the first movement here, which is wonderfully played by the North Texas Chamber Players from the North Texas College of Music. Eugene Corporon is their conductor here on Live and Local. Thank you. That's the opening movement of the Serenade for Wind Instruments by American composer Arthur Byrd. The piece comes from 1898. He was born in 1856. And the story goes from his biography, I guess, that he married a very well-off woman, and he didn't have to, therefore, work a great deal. And apparently he, therefore, didn't work a great deal. He didn't put out a lot of music. Most of it comes from later in his life, but not too late, in a very sort of a circumscribed period of his life, and a lot of it for wind instruments. There's another piece of his is simply called a suite in D major, a little bit longer. This one is about 22 minutes, depending upon how fast one plays it. That one's maybe 26. But this one I think is especially tuneful, and it was played here by the North Texas Chamber Players under the direction of Eugene Corporon, and it'll be played by the Winds of the Prairie Ensemble Sunday night on a concert that starts at 7:30 at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign. I'll be pleased to conduct that program. I'm Kevin Kelly. I'm also the host of this radio show, which is live and local here on FM 90.9. The rest of the week is still shaping up for the show, to be honest. I know that on Thursday we're going to be having some live bluegrass on the program because the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival will be presenting an indoor bluegrass festival on the weekend. And we'll have one, if not two, of the groups involved playing for us live in the studio on Thursday, and the rest of the week still coming together. So I'm not exactly sure if I'll have guests on tomorrow's program or if I'll be sharing some CDs by local musicians, which we do quite regularly and quite intentionally on the program. So we'll let you know what's going to happen if you tune to the station and hear my promo between now and then. Appreciate you joining us on the show today. Our forecast calls for some really strange things this time of the winter. Chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. I haven't paid any attention to know if any have happened so far. Been in the studio for the whole time, but highs in the lower 50s yet this afternoon. Very windy. You probably discovered that already. Chance of precipitation near 100%. Tonight, rain and a chance of thunderstorms in the evening. Then there's a slight chance of rain or snow after midnight. No snow is expected to actually accumulate. Lows tonight will be in the lower 20s, and then much cooler tomorrow with the highs only in the upper 20s under a partly sunny sky with a chance of flurries in the morning. Mostly sunny in the afternoon. Currently 47 degrees. Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products for hospitals and patients throughout our region. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. More information is available at bloodservices.org. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois.